I'm Taylor.
I'm Kat.
And welcome to Square Mile of Murder. Hello, everyone. We're back. We've had a week off. You've had a week off, although maybe you've been catching up on all of those Halloween episodes. And we do hope you enjoyed them, because we're still sweating a little bit after putting all those out.
Yeah. But we did enjoy doing them.
We did. A lot of those are really fun. Yeah, we're back. Did you miss us? We missed you a lot. Yeah.
We also haven't seen each other in over a week, so no, we really missed each other.
It's very strange, all things considered. And yeah, what a way to come back from a break. We have episode 90. That's 90. That's 10 times 9. That's 10 less than 100. Like, how?
You're just trying to prove that you're good at maths.
I'm not good at math. That's the thing. That's about the extent of my numerical abilities. Yeah, that's weird. That's a lot of us just bullshitting.
Yeah, and everyone's still with us. So lots of people are still with us. So thank you.
Potentially more than before. A lot more than before, actually, based on our download numbers, which, like, what the fuck are you all doing here? We appreciate it, but, like...
Hey, thank you. Stick around. Y'all look great today.
Oh, yeah. You had a good Halloween costume. I don't know what it was, but I bet you it was good.
Yeah. And, you know what that means? Because we got to 90... It ends with a zero. We have a Scottish case for you all.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we have a little bit of housekeeping to deal with. Taylor, have you thrown out your 10 pieces of junk?
Was it supposed to be 10? I thought it was 10 between us.
No, it was 10 each for us and 5 for everyone else.
Okay. Well.
Because we are hoarders.
Yeah. I think this is my idea, which is like really bad of me. So I did. I wrote them down. I threw out at least 5, but also it's been like 2 months since we recorded that episode. So
it has been a long time.
Yeah. I know I have thrown out more than this, but this is what I could remember this morning after you prompted me. So not all these were thrown out. They were like donated or whatever. So
okay.
Two.
Removed from the household.
Yes, removed from my domicile. 2 dog Halloween costumes that don't fit my porky puppy anymore. a fabric laundry basket thing that we've stopped using in our kitchen. And 3 old backpacks were donated.
Nice.
So that's 6.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what counts as junk?
Something that doesn't normally go in the rubbish. You know, something extra.
So I can't say, like, the 4 Coke cans that I put in the recycling a couple minutes ago? Damn. I will get back to you. I know I have had 4 other things of junk. Like, I think we donated some clothes and... But I'll do 4 more by next week. How does that sound? I'll make a note.
Okay. I did not keep a list. I did get rid of the box that my baby Yoda came in.
Oh, that's
which
good.
Was just sitting in my room for nearly a year for no reason. So that's gone.
You texted me a list. 6 pieces of junk you got rid of on... Saturday, September 11th.
So that was a few days after we recorded, so no wonder I don't remember.
Yeah. Yodito's box, 3 empty shoe boxes, a roses tin, and an old magazine.
And some clothes and things have gone to charity as well since then, so...
So I guess that counts as 10 for you.
Yeah.
So I just need to catch up.
So... Yeah, I'm about there.
Well done. Yes, so we do implore you all to also get rid of at least 5 pieces of crap cluttering up your house, and, you know, feel free to let us know what they are. Maybe we'll put a post on social media and be like, this is junk. Junk corner.
Yeah.
Welcome.
If you haven't listened to our bonus episode on the Collier Brothers, this will make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, go back and listen.
Yeah. Also, just recommend. That one's good. I think a lot of those Halloween ones are really fun for us because it's kind of like off the beaten path of what we normally do. So that's one kind of housekeeping.
Literal housekeeping.
Yeah.
Now, second piece of housekeeping is our monthly newsletter will be landing in inboxes later this week. So if you want to sign up, the link is in the show notes.
Yep.
Go wild.
Says something like, get our newsletter. It's very creative and original.
Yeah.
So for today's case, we're starting in Glasgow, which is always fun. We're doing something that, like, we don't really do on this show. Certainly don't do in real life.
Just
definitely not. We're joining the ranks of high society. Definitely
not. This is where you can just add some music in, like.
Oh, putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz. Yeah, so today we are telling you guys the story of Archibald Hall, the Monster Butler.
Isn't that just a wonderful nickname?
It is. I mean, this fits into, like, a good transition from Halloween as well. Monster Butler.
It is, yeah.
That'd be a good costume.
Ease ourselves out of it.
Yeah.
Archibald Thompson Hall was born on June 17th, 1924 in Govan, which is on the south side of the River Clyde in Glasgow. We don't know anything about his childhood.
Do we ever?
Nah. But we do know a bit about Govan. So Govan was once a town in its own right, but in 1912 it was incorporated into the city of Glasgow. Back in the day, there was a thriving shipbuilding industry on Clydeside in Glasgow, and part of that was in the Govan area. So the area, at least in the modern era, has always been sort of an industrial working class era, the last couple of hundred years. Mm-hmm. In the 1930s, housing estates were built to help relieve the overcrowded slums in the neighbouring district of the Gorbals. Sadly, the same thing happened that happens every time local authorities do this, and Glasgow City Council are very good at this. And instead of dealing with, you know, socio-economic problems which led to the deprivation and poverty that's been seen in the Gorbals and elsewhere in the city, they just moved people to a new area.
Yeah.
And just moved all the problems with them.
Brilliant.
And Glasgow City Council have done this every time they're trying to improve, like, a quote-unquote rough area or rough district. Just move the people out, gentrify it, then go, oh shit, we've now got problems in this area.
Yeah, and also, like, one of the big problems with these quote-unquote slum clearances here in Glasgow has been that, like, they took people who lived in communities with amenities like transport and shopping and entertainment and put them in the fucking suburbs in these high-rise tower flats, and there's nothing around. So, like,
not only that, it was like the communities themselves were completely decimated because it wasn't like you were moved with your neighbors.
Yeah. So
you were moved, and if you were lucky, you might be near a neighbor.
Yeah, like, it's just not well handled.
No. And this, combined with the decline of the shipbuilding industry throughout the 20th century, led to the area developing a reputation for poverty and deprivation. And in more recent years, it has become known for high levels of drug addiction and unemployment. In 1994, the area was branded one of the worst places to live in Britain. And from my experience in my old job, or one of my old jobs in Glasgow, I know a lot of these problems do still persist in parts of Govan.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad about this. It is an area that the council cannot gentrify. They keep trying. Like, at some point, you're going to have to deal with the problems.
Yeah. Can't just paint over them with the new coat of paint.
I mean, they moved film and TV studios there because the land and buildings were cheap, and even that couldn't gentrify the district. Everyone moved into Finiston across the river.
Yeah. Yeah. Although we don't have sort of specific details about Archibald Hall's childhood, you know, we can speculate pretty generally about the kind of environment that he grew up in. Working class areas were hard hit by the financial recessions following the First World War and the Wall Street crash. So growing up in interwar Govan was likely very difficult. Hall's life of crime began at the age of 15. He started small with petty theft and small-time scams. According to Murderpedia, one of his first known crimes was stealing money from Red Cross charity tins, which would have been in either 1939 or 1940. But from what we can find, he was never charged with this theft, and he continued with petty theft and scams for the next 2 years. Around this time, he allegedly entered into a relationship with an older divorced neighbor. Now, it's not clear whether or not this neighbor was male or female, because all of the sources about Archibald Hall just so love to talk about the fact that he was bisexual and that he used his sexuality, quote unquote, to his advantage when committing crimes. Ah, yes.
That really annoyed me. Do you know what I use my bisexuality to my advantage for? Banging hot people.
Well, there you go.
That is what you use your bisexuality to your advantage
like,
for.
Like, what more could you ask for, really? Like, that's all you need. Yeah. I feel like that is a very common theme. It's always like, oh, he was a gay murderer. It's like, okay.
Yeah, and the majority of serial killers have been straight white men.
Exactly. So maybe we should be saying, well, he was a straight murderer. Because that's clearly like, the defining characteristic. But yeah.
It's just the way it's like, it seems to be in like every sauce and like.
Yeah. Plenty of other killers or criminals have used sexuality to their advantage while committing crimes in every situation. So it's not really that big a deal. I mean, I think it's the time period probably that became attached to his name because it was, you know,
it was illegal.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then now that's just what all the sources say. It's like, oh, this bisexual guy. He was a bad guy. But anyway. This much older neighbor, whoever they may have been, initiated a teenage Hall into all things sexual and introduced him to the high life, giving him a taste for the finer things. Again, this is all pretty vague. We don't know who the neighbor was or what they did to introduce him to high society, but whatever that may have been, Hall had developed a taste for sort of high class, highbrow, finer things, and he stepped up his stealing.
I'm also interested in how, so it's never overtly said, but it's always implied that he was from, like, obviously grew up in government, it's always kind of implied, you know, given a taste of the finer things in life. So it's kind of implied they grew up with very little. Yeah. So I mean, I would be interested to know who this neighbor actually was.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's
this fancy lady or guy living in Govan?
Hall quickly progressed to housebreaking, stealing whatever valuables he could, especially jewelry. In 1941, at the age of 17, he used the proceeds from his thefts to leave Glasgow and he headed for London, quickly establishing himself in the city's gay scene. But he was soon arrested when he attempted to sell some of the stolen jewellery, and this was when he received his first prison sentence. This is when things start to get a bit vague again. because we don't know how long a sentence Hall received at this point. We know it wasn't a particularly lengthy one. It was during his first prison stretch that Hall decided he was going to change his life. Not in the reformed character kind of way, but instead he was going to con his way into high society. Whilst in prison, he read books including Burke's Peerage, which details ancestry and genealogy of the upper classes, peers, knights, barons, etc., and Who's Who. Not the off-brand board game. It is an annual publication of rich, famous, and influential people. But it's the off-brand version of Guess Who.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Because, like, so my dad was, like, a major, like, business guy. Like, he was super into, like, all the business stuff and networking. So when I was growing up, we always had the, like, annual editions of Who's Who in business, Who's Who in real estate, Who's Who in academia or whatever on our bookshelves. And when I was like a kid, I would just flip through them for fun sometimes. So it's really funny seeing that come up here because it's like, oh shit, yeah, I remember those. Now it's just called the internet.
Yeah. Or Forbes.
Yeah.
He also took elocution lessons whilst in prison.
What prison is this?
I have no idea, but it is the 40s.
Yeah, I love it.
So maybe it was like about reforming character and passing for, you know, beating the working classness out of you.
Well, it's just like, oh, okay, well, so you're in prison, but we're gonna teach you how to set a table. Just don't use that salad knife for evil.
So these lessons helped soften his Glaswegian accent and so he could pass himself off as someone who could at least work for the upper classes. Couldn't quite pass himself off as the upper classes, but could work for them.
Fair.
Upon his release from prison, he needed a new name to go with his new persona. So he chose Roy Fontaine, reportedly inspired by the actress Joan Fontaine.
There you go. Between the 1940s and mid-1970s, Hall, or Fontaine, continued as a con man and thief, but also gained legitimate employment as a butler, punctuated with further prison sentences for the theft of jewels and other valuables. Again, this is pretty vague, and we're not sure about the details of these incidents. In the 1960s, he was serving a 10-year prison sentence for various thefts, but escaped in 1964 from Blundstone Prison and was on the run for 2 years before being recaptured in 1966. According to Glasgow Live, he had been stealing from his wealthy employers when he was working as a butler, and that he had a number of disguises he used to trick others. One of his disguises was to wear a, quote, Arab headdress and used the name Mutlak Medina. He convinced his victims that he was a sheik, and after luring them to his hotel room, he managed to escape with £300,000 worth of jewels. That's a lot of jewels.
Yeah, so it says £300,000 worth, but I don't know if that was in today's money or old money back in the day, because it'd be in the millions.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's old money, that's high-level jewel thievery. But yeah, this is the only, like, specific story we've been able to find about his crimes during this 30-year period, which is, like, that's a long time. During this period, he was also married and divorced, but much like the rest of this time in Hall's life, the details of that have been lost and we know nothing about said marriage or divorce. However, in 1975, and he was now 51 years old, Hall was released from prison and returned to Scotland, where he took up a new butler job at Kirklington House in Dumfriesshire in southwest Scotland. Originally, his aim had been the same as at his previous places of employment, an upper class smash and grab, if you will. But it turned out that Hall actually quite liked his job at Kirklington House, working for a dowager named Lady Margaret Hudson. And he liked her too, So he ended up staying there for 2 years before a series of events led to him hitting the road once again.
In 1977, 2 years into his employment at Kirkleaton House, an old acquaintance of Hall's from one of his stretches in prison, named David Wright, also got a job at Kirkleaton House as the estate's gamekeeper. Shortly after Wright began the gamekeeper's job, Hall found that he was attempting to steal some of Lady Hudson's jewellery, which led to a fight between the two men.
Mm.
Wright threatened Hall that if he reported him for stealing the jewellery and told Lady Hudson about his criminal past, he would tell Lady Hudson about Hall's own criminal past. So it was kind of mutually assured destruction.
That's quite a good detente of like, you fuck me over, I fuck you over, buddy.
But Hall wasn't really happy with this sort of hold that Wright had over him. He invited Wright on a rabbit hunt on the estate, under the guise of the two coming to an agreement about the situation whilst killing the wildlife.
Sure, sure.
Which is what happens on estates, sadly. But rather than reach an amicable solution, Hall shot and killed Wright before burying his body near a small stream on the grounds.
So, different kind of hunting happening.
Yeah.
A little bit there.
Mm. So I know he's worked there 2 years, but you have to be very confident in how well you know the estate to bury someone on the estate where you work.
Yeah. It's bold.
Some sources describe Wright and Hall as having been lovers when they were in prison, but as we said before, Hall's sexuality has been used to make this case sort of even more scandalous or add like another dimension to his crimes. So they may have been, but they may not have been, and neither are alive today to verify.
Yeah.
Hall continued to work for Lady Hudson for a few months, but in November 1977, Hall left Scotland for London once again because Lady Hudson discovered his criminal past.
So the problem was that Hall wasn't that keen on putting the past behind him and going back to his normal life of just robbing the rich. Hall, as one of the contributors to his Murderpedia page described it, had developed a taste for blood, which is like so cliched that I love it.
Mm.
When he returned to London, Hall quickly found a job as a butler for former MP 82-year-old Walter Scott Elliott and his wife Dorothy, who was age 60. The couple were regarded as very wealthy, with Walter described as having been from an aristocratic background, and they were keen antique collectors. So once again, Hall planned to work for them for a while before robbing them and moving on, just like he'd always done before. Except this time would be slightly different in that Hall planned to steal enough money, antiques, and other valuables that he could finally retire and not have to keep finding rich people to work for and then steal from.
I know, such a chore.
I know, like, you do that for 30 plus years and it really wears on you. So
yeah.
you gotta find a more sustainable retirement plan than that. That's for sure.
Mm.
This time he had two accomplices, a man named Michael Kitto, who that's K-I-T-T-O. I am not capable of saying double consonants like that correctly.
Mm.
So Michael Kitto was described as a small-time crook and a petty thief. And the other accomplice was a woman named Mary Coggle, who was a local sex worker with whom Hall had some kind of on-again, off-again relationship. Late one night in early December, Hall and Kitto were discussing plans to rob Hall's wealthy employers as Hall showed his friend around the house, and Dorothy Scott Elliott saw them. Some sources say she overheard them planning their heist, while other sources say that Hall was showing Kitto the master bedroom, expecting Walter and Dorothy to be asleep, but Dorothy was awake and wanted to know why Hall was creeping around late at night with a stranger, which is fair.
Yeah.
Kiddo grabbed a nearby pillow and suffocated her before placing her back in the bed next to her husband. Just fucking cold.
Yeah. Walter awoke as Hall placed Dorothy's body back in the bed, but Hall managed to convince him that she had just had a nightmare and he was helping her back to bed. I mean, he's an 82-year-old man.
Yeah, so that's true.
Could possibly quite easy to convince. We have no idea, like, what his mental faculties were like.
Yeah, that's true.
And the next morning, Walter didn't seem to notice that his wife was dead in their bed and went about his normal day.
That's a bit wild.
Hmm. So Hall, Kitto, and Coggle decided that Mary Coggle would impersonate Dorothy, clear out the couple's bank accounts. Then they would sedate Walter until they figured out what to do with him and with Dorothy's body. And they decided they would bury Dorothy somewhere in rural Scotland.
And they're in London, so right?
Yeah.
And it's the...
Or somewhere around in that kind of area, somewhere down south.
And it's the 70s.
Yes.
So...
a lot less cars on the road than now, though.
Yeah, that's true. Just like still.
And I don't know if there was a speed limit on the M1 at that point.
Just seems like a long way to go.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, Peter Tobin weird travel choice here.
Yeah. So Hall informed Walter that his wife had gone to Scotland and was waiting for him to join her. So this, to me, suggests that he's maybe not
totally with it.
As compos mentis as he once was.
Yeah. It sounds like it. If the guy can get up and not notice that his dear wife is lying dead next to him, then...
And then be told, oh, she's in Scotland, you've got to go, we've got to go and meet her.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say.
Yeah. So the trio drugged him with sleeping pills, then they seated him in the car, hid Dorothy's body in the boot of the car, and drove to Scotland.
Oh, sure. This is a very macabre, like, Weekend at Bernie's situation, isn't it?
It's just very strange. It's
very odd.
It's like the thought process.
This is like, this is a great idea.
So I know it's the 70s and it's a different time and everything, but you're in London and you're going to drive to, sort of, when I say rural Scotland, what we mean is like the Grampians and the the Cairngorms and the Highlands, as we'll soon see. So yeah, it's not as much police presence. So we're not, you know, you weren't tracked, like, every move wasn't tracked and everything, like it is now. But would you really want to drive all the way to Scotland with a dead body in the car?
No, and also just, like, there are plenty of other places in England that are not, you know, the property on which you committed your murder that you could hide a body.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, I didn't want to say that outright.
Just, like...
As though I'd been thinking about it.
It just seems, like, I understand he has an emotional connection to Scotland because, like, he's Scottish and everything, but, like, Scotland doesn't want this kind of shenanigans, okay?
No.
So, stop it, y'all. If you're gonna bury your dead, bury him in the country that you killed him in.
And it's just manners, isn't it?
It's better for the environment. Kind of. I mean, you're still burying it, but, you know.
I'm really looking forward to how this ends.
It's not... That's it. I just stop right there. Just like, it's silly. Yeah. It's silly. I don't get it. It's silly.
I don't either. There's so much rural area in England. And not just such as the smell as well.
Yeah.
Like, at some point.
I mean, like, I know that, like, 1970s cars tended to be, like, a little bit bigger, or at least the boot was sort of, like, further away from you than they are now in most cars, but
I don't know, because, like, minis,
oh, that's
and
true,
old Fords and Morrises and things like that, they're very small.
Please tell me they did this in a mini.
No, it was a Ford Anglican.
Okay,
which still isn't
a
big
car. Yeah, it's just lots of choices were made, and I think that nobody can argue they were the correct choices.
So, once in Scotland. They buried Dorothy's body by the side of the road near Braco, which is a small village between Stirling and Crieff in Perthshire. And then they continued north towards Inverness, where they murdered Walter with a shovel that they'd obviously brought along. And then buried his body near the village of Tomick, which is about 30 miles southwest of Inverness. The group returned to London and attempted to lie low for a while. But much like Hall, when he was a teenager, Mary Coggle had quickly taken a liking to the nice things in life. Mm. And was beginning to draw attention to herself, flashing her newfound cash and wearing Dorothy's clothes and jewellery. So, the logical solution for Hall and Kitto was to murder her as well.
Obviously.
Like, of course, why didn't anyone else think of that?
Yeah, duh. Also, just like, so maybe the trunk of their car wasn't big enough for two bodies, but why wouldn't they just murder Walter as well?
I don't know.
Just, yeah. So many questions.
I wonder if they kind of didn't really have a plan. They're like, we'll go north and we'll figure it out. Or just put some distance between
us and,
us and then the house.
Just, So they don't sound like super organized in general. That's for sure.
No. But that's a good thing, because when serial killers are unorganized, that's how they get caught.
That is true. That is true. They're like, we gotta kill Mary. But before killing her, they did, ever so kindly and politely, give Mary the option to stop wearing the fur coat and jewelry that was drawing attention to them. But she refused. So they killed her with a fire poker, and once again, headed to Scotland to dispose of her body. Obviously.
It's a choice.
It is that. They drove to Middleby, which is described as a hamlet, not even a village, in southwest Scotland, about 15 miles north of the Scottish-English border, and left Mary's body in a stream. Now they're just getting sloppy.
Mm.
Like, at least bury her.
Yeah. But 70s, what was forensics like at that point?
But also just like, if she's just in a body of water, I feel like she's much more likely to be found. Especially in a stream.
Oh, well. You'll see how that pans
spoiler
out.
Alert. So yeah, they left her body in a stream for whatever reason. They then headed back into England with a plan to stay at Hall's holiday home in Cumbria, which is the northwestern border county, and it's where the Lake District is. This man has a holiday home. This butler has a holiday home.
Yeah, I sort of did a double take when I read that. I was like,
fancy.
Okay. He's a butler. He's constantly thieving. But he has a holiday home?
Sure. Obviously.
But I don't know, like, what kind of holiday home it could have
been. I'm talking just like a little cabin, like a little hut kind of thing.
Yeah, it could have been like a big shed.
Yeah. But still. I mean, he's on the property ladder.
Yeah.
So, you really can't ask for much more than that these days, so.
No.
However, when they got there, they found Donald, Hall's half-brother, who had recently been released from prison. So Donald, like his brother, had a history of theft and petty crime, but was also a pedophile.
So I couldn't find out if he was a convicted pedophile, and that's like what he'd been in prison for, or if it was for like theft or, you know, small time scams or something. But either way, he was a known child sex offender.
Either way, not a good situation. Hall reportedly despised his brother because he was a pedophile. Fair enough. So he and Kitto decided to kill Donald. Yeah, does seem like a bit of a taste for blood situation here.
Yeah, and this is all taking place in a very short space of time.
Yeah, and they're certainly, like, escalating and sounds like decompensating a little bit here. They convinced Donald that their next job was going to involve tying someone up and tricked him into letting them practice on him. After tying him up, they gassed him with chloroform and then drowned him in the bathtub. But it was their attempt to dispose of Donald's body that finally led to their downfall.
So the pair stowed Donald's body in the boot of their car and headed north.
Back to Scotland!
Or at least they're quite close this time.
Yeah, that's true.
But Hall was concerned about the number plate of their car. The plate contained 3 9s, which Hall considered to be unlucky. So he had Kitto change the plates for fakes.
Oh, sure.
In the UK, you pay road tax, which these days is based on vehicle emissions. And back in the day, and this only changed in 2014, but you used to pay your road tax either 6 monthly or annually, and you were given a paper disc to display at the bottom of the passenger side of the windscreen. So the left-hand side as you sat in the car. And the tax disc showed the date it expired and the number plate for the car it was for.
Yeah.
So if you sold your car halfway through, you had to send your tax disc back to get your refund. You couldn't just move the disc into a new car.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, now the whole system is digital, and that's why they eventually did away with discs, because, like, number plate, AMPR, which is automatic number plate recognition,
mm-hmm.
is now sophisticated enough and quick enough that they can use that to find out if a car's taxed rather than, you know, just beat cops walking around looking at them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You which do is, still see some cars with little discs in the pockets, like older cars yeah. on the road. So
some people have just never taken them yeah. out.
Like, fair enough.
Mm. But in early 1978, it was very much paper-based, and the tax disc in Hall and Kitto's car now showed a different number plate to the plates on the car.
Oh,
and
boy.
We know that police will sometimes arrest people on, like, minor charges such as traffic violations, just to have them off the streets and in custody until they can get enough information and evidence to arrest them for, like, the bigger crime they suspect them of.
Yeah. I mean, Al Capone, tax evasion.
Yeah. And that's kind of what happened here. So, the weather was bad, you know, as it can be in Scotland in January. I'm sure Taylor will report back to us in a couple of months.
Yeah. Oh.
So, Hall and Kitto only made it as far as North Berwick, which is near Edinburgh. So we're still on, like, a cross-country road trip.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they got to North Berwick before they were forced to stop for the night and stay in a hotel in the town.
Now, the hotelier was suspicious of the way Hall and Kitto were acting and worried about whether or not they would pay before checking out the next morning. So he called the police, gave them the car's number plate, and asked them to check the men out. But obviously, the number plate didn't match the car. So two policemen were dispatched to the hotel, which was, would you believe it, a handy 200 yards away from the police station. They didn't think this through.
I don't know, at this point, is it arrogance as well?
Yeah.
So, like, they just didn't give a fuck.
Or just, like, blind panic.
Either or.
Both, probably. So Hall and Kitto were taken to the police station for questioning, and the police towed the car to the station, which is when they found Donald's body in the boot. That is quite damning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, you're driving with fake plates, so, you know, it's going to be a fine and a little bit of jail time for that.
Yeah.
Oh, what's this? Oh, there's a body in the boot.
Oh, it's your murdered brother. Cool. You're going to be here for a bit longer, guys. A little more paperwork there.
Mm.
Hall managed to escape through the window after asking to use the bathroom, but was soon recaptured in a nearby town. During their investigation... Oh, there is a dog. Oh, he is... He has got post-walk zoomies happening.
Oh.
Christ. Blah, 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 blah. During their investigation, police matched the fake number plate to a report in Newcastle under Lyme, which is in the West Midlands, not near Newcastle upon Tyne, which is, you know, the famous Newcastle.
I might be biased being from the northeast and like being an hour away from Newcastle, but I'm pretty sure if you say anywhere in the UK, if you say Newcastle, unless you're just outside of Newcastle under Lyme, everyone thinks you mean Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast.
Yeah, I had never heard of this Newcastle under Lyme situation. So, an antiques dealer had become suspicious of two men who had offered silver and china pieces at well below their real value. And believing that the pieces may be stolen, the dealer contacted the police and gave them the number plate of the men's car. The number plate belonged to Walter and Dorothy Scott Elliott's car, and Hall and Kiddo had been using that since killing the couple, so police made the connection between the missing aristocrats and the two men.
The police also linked the two men to Mary Coggle's death. Her body had been found on Christmas Day, 1977, so just a few days, or within a week or so after she was murdered.
Yeah.
And it's because she had also been registered as the Scott Elliott's housekeeper at one time.
Oh.
And whilst in custody, Hall also confessed to the murder of David Wright and eventually showed the police where his and Walter and Dorothy's bodies were. Now, because some of the murders were committed in England and some in Scotland, and then there was a lot of cross-border travel, the two men were tried both in Scotland and in England. So, Kiddo was given 3 life sentences with a recommendation that he serve 15 years by the English court, but the Scottish court did not give a minimum recommendation. According to Wikipedia, because I couldn't find another source to corroborate this, Kiddo was actually lucky that he and Hall were caught when they were, because police found evidence that Hall was planning on killing him as well.
Oops.
Which I suppose when he's already killed, like... the other accomplice. They've killed Mary Coggle.
Yeah, like...
he's killed his own brother.
We all know who's next here.
Yeah. Hall was found guilty of 4 murders, and in Scotland was given a recommendation of at least 15 years, but in England, the court recommended that he never be released. And successive Home Secretaries placed Hall on the dangerous prisoners list who should serve a whole-of-life tariff. And this was because back in the day... the Home Secretary had the power to place someone who was given life in prison on a whole-of-life tariff, meaning that life meant life, which it doesn't usually mean in this country.
Yeah.
You are usually paroled at some point, or given the chance for parole at some point.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about this a couple times with some of the like more high-profile serial killers that we've covered.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the Patreon one we did in October was Harold Shipman, so yes. He was... sentenced to life, and the Home Secretary at the time, I believe, was David Blunkett. He, if I remember correctly, he placed him on whole-of-life tariff, but it was actually during that period that that power was taken away from the Home Secretary.
Mm-hmm. Now, you may be thinking, hold on a minute there, guys. There were 5 victims. Why was Hall only found guilty of 4 and Kiddo only found guilty of 3? Well, Dorothy's case was ordered to lie on file. This means that there is sufficient evidence to take the case to trial and should be enough to convict, but the judge decides that it's not in the public interest for a trial to take place, and so nobody has ever actually been convicted of Dorothy's death. Cases can lie on file for a number of reasons. Most common is that the defendant has acknowledged, admitted to, or been convicted of other charges, either similar or more serious, and therefore it's not in the interest of the public to proceed with another trial at the taxpayer's expense. These kinds of charges can be reinstated at a later date, but only with the permission of the trial judge or the court of appeal.
This I find quite just a very strange thing. I mean, I've heard of, especially in big serial killer cases where they only charge them with a sample.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But there's only 5 victims here. So that, to me, seems strange.
I also just don't know why they wouldn't include it in one of the trials, in the English trials, because that's where she was murdered. So, why not just add it on? That just seems strange.
But also, it's not unheard of for them to hold back in, serial murder trials, to hold back a few victims
just in case
appeals go through or retrials are granted, and then it's right, we're gonna slap you with all of them, or we've got something held back in case, and then suddenly there'll be a it'll be in the public interest.
Yeah That's true. Also, if for some reason they were acquitted of all the other murders, they could say, oh, actually,
yeah,
they killed this poor woman too. So, Michael Kitto was released in November 1992 after serving 14 years, and we do not know what happened to him afterward. If he is still alive, he would be in his early 80s now. Hall spent the rest of his life in prison. He made numerous attempts to take his own life, and in 1995, he wrote a letter to the Sunday newspaper, The Observer, in which he requested that he be allowed to die. Now, obviously, that request was denied by the prison service. He also wrote an autobiography titled A Perfect Gentleman, which is great.
Nope. It's a choice. It's
a common theme with this guy. Which was published in 1999. At the time of publication, he reportedly said that, quote, death will be my release.
Yeah, when you spent years trying to take your own life and request that the prison service let you die, then saying that is not going to change their minds.
No, it's not really persuasive, is it?
No one's going to turn a blind eye on the night shift.
Yeah. Archibald Hall died in 2002 of a stroke at Kingston Prison in Portsmouth on the south coast of England. He was 78, and at the time, he was the oldest prisoner in Britain to be serving a whole-of-life tariff. And that is the story of Archibald Hall, also known as Roy Fontaine, the Monster Butler.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts?
It's interesting because he's a serial killer. I had never heard of him before I went looking for Scottish killers. I actually came across him when we were trying to find ancient Scottish serial killers.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, 70s, not so ancient. It's weird to me that he's not talked about more, because that was such a, this is going to sound really bad, but in the grand scheme of time frames for the heyday of Scottish serial killers, the 60s and the 70s was it. So,
I mean, when you think of for lack of a better term, popular serial killers, but let's just go with the obvious, Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
And they're all from the 60s and 70s and into the 80s.
Yeah. So, I don't know if there's such a proliferation of Scottish serial killers. It was oh, this guy, he doesn't count. He's not that interesting. But, I mean, you've got Angus Sinclair, Bible John, Peter Tobin has this sort of Scottish...
He actually, this is what I was going to tell you afterwards, he, a few weeks ago, admitted, he said, I'm not Bible John, but I've killed more, but he won't give any details.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, and I'm like, That is. He's just getting his last laugh in, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because he's on his, well into his, must be into his 80s
like
83
now.
Yeah. And I'm like, you're just getting the last laugh in, aren't
you?
He's
just bored. You've also,
like, yeah, I killed more people, but I'm not going to give their families closure because, yeah.
Yeah. You've also got, like, Peter Manuel, like.
Oh, yeah.
So there's all of these. So it's just interesting to me that this guy doesn't come up more, and I don't know if it's because he didn't, like, he doesn't have as high body counts, or...
I wonder if... So the late 70s was the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah.
And I think it's he could have just got lost in that because that was such a high-profile case, which I think was mid-70s. I think it was 79 when he was caught.
Yeah. It is interesting to me that we do know, like, we do know about his crimes now. He is obviously a killer that, so, like, Glasgow Live has covered him. Like, there's a handful of sources out there. Mm. But there is still so much unknown about a lot of his life, which just makes me wonder what else happened.
Yeah, so I had a few thoughts when I was researching this, because I thought he, for 30 years, was in and out of prison, mm-hmm. but he was still always getting work as, like, a butler.
Yeah.
So that is in the that's in the upper classes, in the upper echelons. You know, you're working class people. We don't have a butler.
Oh.
I have a little tie that my cat wears.
Yeah, yeah.
On a collar that he wears at Christmas.
That's
for his Christmas dinner.
Enough.
That's the nearest I have to having a butler.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and rich people talk, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
Very gossipy.
Oh, well, because, you know, good help is so hard to find. Like,
so part of me is like, well, why did word not get around that he was
stealing everything? Yeah.
Long before then, but then I had another thought. So we know that he at some point was, you know, putting on this con that he was an Arab sheikh.
Yes.
And things like that. So I wonder if he was using, like, rather than just stealing, part of it was more of a confidence trickster.
Yeah.
Like a con man. And people will admit to someone breaking into their house and stealing stuff. We're a lot less likely to admit to having been conned because we all like to think we're too smart.
Totally.
And it happens in, like, every walk of life, not just, like, having things stolen from us or, like, you know, bad investments or, in, like, even up to, like, bad relationships and bad friendships. Mm-hmm. We all think that we're too smart to fall for it.
Yeah.
We're not.
Yeah. Because that's what these people do. Like.
So I wonder if it's almost like an embarrassment kind of thing. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't.
They don't want to talk about it because.
You don't want that tarnishing your reputation with your fancy neighbors and everything. It is interesting. Mm-hmm. And it does sound like there's probably many more layers to his crimes than, like, we know about now, with the disguises, with the, like, moving back and forth. Like, he clearly had some sort of, like, criminal sophistication, but it seems like those details have just gotten lost over time. So
and the detail definitely seems to be focused on, oh, he came from this really, like, rough working class
area,
deprived area, and he got a taste for the finer things, and he was bisexual, and you know, it's the details have been lost in favor of, like, these more scandalous versions.
Yeah, like, so we don't know anything about a bunch of his crimes, the burglaries, whatever, but like, three of the articles that I found about him mentioned that, oh, he probably had a sexual relationship with Lord Mountbatten. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. One of the articles I found had, like, a long list of, like, all these aristocrats that he had some kind of sexual relationship with, and I'm like,
yeah,
so
great. Like,
you expect me to believe that in all of human history there wasn't anyone in the upper classes who wasn't straight?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of them.
Oh yeah. But yeah, I wonder if it's almost like a saving face kind of thing as to why it wasn't talked about in those circles and how he kept, you know, finding his way in.
No, totally.
And
also, it seems like probably, like, he probably had multiple personas, not just Archibald Hall, not just Roy Fontaine, but, like, it is interesting because the sort of details of these murders make him seem really disorganized and not that clever when it comes to these things. But he did manage to kind of worm his way into high society and steal from a whole bunch of people for decades. So.
Yeah. And also, I've just thought, so he went by Roy Fontaine. This is way before the days of, like, proper background checks. Yeah. If you rocked up and said, right, my name's Roy Fontaine, I live at this address, these are my references, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's not going to be cross-referenced with a criminal record for Archibald Hall.
No, definitely not.
So, yeah, it would depend on what name he was using, if he legally changed his name.
Yeah.
Things like that, so.
Yeah.
Oh, there was meant to be a film adaptation.
I saw that. I was thinking as I was reading through his Wikipedia page, like, this would be a really good movie.
So, in 2005, actor Malcolm McDowell and Hollywood screenwriter Peter Bellwood announced that they were seeking a director and funding for a film based on Archibald Hall's life. This film has never come to fruition. In 2011, Malcolm McDowell stated the film was currently being made and would be named Monster Butler.
Sure.
But the film was then cancelled due to lack of funding. But some work had already taken place, some filming and production. Ooh. So there was crew members who were left unpaid.
Aww.
That's all according to Wikipedia, so.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I do think this would be a good film. I could see it being one of those, like, you know, period dramas that end up, you know, in all the award shows kind of thing, that some big name actor's like, I'm going to play the killer butler, you guys.
What, like Benedict Cumberbatch or something like that?
Yeah, or like maybe not Leonardo DiCaprio, but like those big name guys, you know, those guys.
I think it is one of those that, you know, like, based on a true story, it would work. But if you wrote it as fiction, would it be well received? It's very chaotic.
It is very. I think you'd have to do some finessing a little bit. Yeah. Yes. Some poetic license here.
Mm.
Well, it's fine. You know why? Because we already know we are going to create a slate of films about Scottish crimes. We already have one. It's damn near in pre-production. Patreon just has to kick in with the funding. We've already got pretty much the whole thing plotted out. Blue Men of the Minch. And so we can just add Monster Butler to the list. That'll be production number two. So it's fine that they didn't make one. It'll be our gain.
Yeah, why not? I mean, yeah, we just need some money.
So, if you... no, it's a good one. And I like that this is like... So... We're going to do a big Scottish case for the 100th episode.
Just tell them, why don't you?
What?
Everyone's going to figure it out.
Well... Just know it's big, and obviously, like, our first four Scottish cases were the Square Mile cases because it's our name and all that stuff, and they're quite famous as well in the sort of like Scottish crime history kind of thing. I like this, I like that this case kind of like straddles those two worlds and like time periods of like. Because he was born in the 30s or grew up in the 30s and like,
yeah.
So it's a sort of like middle Scottish murder history to cover. It's yeah. interesting. But yeah, a refreshingly sort of more unknown case.
I also wonder, I just thought of this now, I wonder if it's less well known because it crosses the border a lot.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking. It's like the details could easily get lost because they're driving back and forth from fucking London to the Highlands all the time. So
yeah, it's not like it's not like in the border counties.
No, it's like opposite ends of the landmass. So
yeah.
But yeah, so we hope you liked this Scottish serial killer. And let us know if you've heard of the case before. If you have any other details that we couldn't manage to find, let us know. And yeah, if you like the show, as always, be sure to rate and review us on your favorite podcast app, especially Apple Podcasts, because it helps us get in front of more people. And you should also subscribe so you never miss a new episode, like after we've been on a week break and come back with something new like this. Like, you don't want to miss it, right?
Yeah.
And if you would like to get some cool Square Mile merch, we do have a selection of products, and there may or may not be a sale coming up this month for sort of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday type situation. So you should be on the lookout for that. And you can find that merch at squaremileofmurder.store or at the links in our show notes or on our website.
And if you'd like to help us cover the costs of making the podcast and help us invest in the future of the show and start our own film production company,
yeah,
you can join our Patreon page. Tiers start at just £1 a month. Every patron gets regular episodes one day early, a shout out on the show, priority case requests, and a lifetime discount on merch. That's just for £1 a month. As the tiers go up, you get even more, including bonus episodes and exclusive stationery merch that you can't buy anywhere. So check all that out at patreon.com/squaremileofmurder. Links are in all the usual places. So we will be back next week. Massive double two-part episode coming the next couple of weeks. So we will see you next week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.